you, JT Alcoholic.
Hey, JT.
That's sobriety date. It's February 4th, 2012. Sorry for being late. I was eating pizza and had a really interesting conversation that needed to happen. And sometimes, like, things that happen are the way they're supposed to happen. And it was not my intention, but I was still late, and that shouldn't impact you. So I do apologize. First off. Second, I'm an alcoholic. I drink when it's a bad idea. When it's probably, you know, I should have every reason why I should probably do, like, the next right thing, and I do the hard left, which is usually wreck my life. I started drinking really early. Apparently it's like normal, so it's like 13. It's like a normal time, apparently. I thought it was early. And it immediately started to do things in my life that were phenomenal. I never really felt like I fit in. I felt like I was always the butt of the joke, and when I drank, I didn't care. So as soon as I recognized that and I put two and two together, I just pursued that till I was pulling the carcass of the car behind me when it didn't even have wheels anymore. I was just pulling it. It had been a bad idea for a very long time before I even stepped foot in Alcoholics Anonymous, before I even knew what alcoholism was. I just thought I was crazy and that I was a bad child and that I had a really hard life, but I grew up in Craddock, middle class home. Father worked really hard. My mom worked part time when she wasn't like on us, like teaching us right from wrong and like stepping up to do like PTA and all the important things that adults do for children, right? I felt like I wasn't loved because they showed me the truth rather than coat my feelings, and I didn't like that. Like I wanted you to shower me with affection and attention, and that's just not the way they did it, because it's not what they were brought up in, right? So I felt like I had some bad cards dealt my way. There were probably people who had it worse. There were probably people who had it better. I wasn't sure, but in my heart of heart, I knew that everyone else had it way better than I did, and they also got that book at school. The one that said how to be a human. I missed that day, probably when I was skipping. Which, you know, led to a lot of other things. Like, alcohol was great, but not having to deal with any sort of consequences or responsibilities or hard things was even greater priority. And alcohol was just one of the lubricants that made it possible to do that. Because I don't need alcohol today to want to not take care of responsibilities, because I want to do the least amount possible and gain the most amount and wonder why things don't work out. That's an inconsistency I still haven't mastered yet in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just glad that I'm aware of it, right? So a lot of fear growing up, you know, fearing like I missed the boat, fearing like I missed out, and was great fuel when I was probably just a hard drinker at, you know, 15. But when I would wake up and feel like disgusted with myself, I thought that was abnormal. But when you do bad things and you feel bad about it, that's a good thing, apparently. I didn't find out until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous that psychopaths don't feel remorse whatsoever. Like, they don't care. They just run through people's lives and they just don't give a shit. Excuse my language, I apologize. That'll be the last one, I promise. They don't care, and I do, and I didn't know that was the case. I just thought that wherever it went, bad stuff happened, and that was it, you know? And it was part of the crew that I hung out with. Like, I didn't, when people stopped, you know, when I was uncomfortable to be around for other people, I would find that out and I would switch groups, go find someone else. other groups of people to go tromp around in and destroy things. You know, that wasn't my intention. I never woke up one morning or any of those mornings and be like, you know what, I'm just going to go destroy things today. You know, I woke up and really wanted to do well. I wanted to do nice things for people. I wanted to be a stand-up guy. I wanted to be liked, not just because I wanted the attention. I wanted to do likable things. I wanted to do esteemable things. I just didn't have the power. I didn't feel like I had the power. So fast forward, I drop out of high school because I was going to have to be there for a total of 7 years in order to get a diploma. And I was like, nope, I'm not going to do that. I'm on year 5 and a half in the middle of my 5th year, and I find out that I'm going to need to be here for 2 more years, and I'm like, just sign me out right now. I'll just take the test, and I'll bounce. So I took the GED, and the principal called me up and was just like, you know, you scored in the like top 5th percentile in Virginia in the GED. And I was just like, explicitive, I don't care. Because in reality, the way I was feeling at that time, I felt like there was nothing that was good about high school. My experience was horrible. A lot of it was my own making, though. You know, I pointed a finger at school for a really long time, and I pointed a finger at parents, school, and then when I got kicked out of the Navy a year and a half later, was in their quick release program, was promoted to civilian after a year and a half. So that was a catch and release. I had to go through a battery of psychological evaluations, which I figured out early, you don't tell the truth about stuff like that. Doctors, it's not like they don't go to school for their, you know, do that for their life's work to help people. Can't tell them the truth. Because when I'm getting information from my peers, which who I really get my information from, I don't take it from like, you know, trusted sources. I just get other people's experiences. And they're like, don't tell them the truth. Tell them you only had like 3 drinks. You know, that's all you drink, you know. I would pay attention to these people, and they weren't having to live in my brain. Like, I had to live with my brain, and I couldn't deal with it. You know, so I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous while I was in the Navy, and wasn't quite done. You know, because I get kicked out of treatment. I drink coffee with sugar at that time, and I did not know how to follow directions. It's very simple. You just follow these directions, and if you do X, Y, and Z, then you're going to get through this program. And I could not follow simple directions. And I blamed him for kicking me out, right? Not to mention, to them, we didn't discuss the fact that I had a DUI that was pending when I signed up and conveniently evaded that by just not doing ASAP, which cost my father about $40,000. I'm still paying that amends off. Go team. So, you know, the Navy did find out about that, and they find out about my drinking because I can't show up to work on time, and I get pulled out of my rack by my LPO and thrown in the shower, and they send me to SARP, and I get kicked out of that, and it's like I'm batting 1,000 for just damage. Everywhere is destruction, and I'm starting to feel like that's my purpose in life. You know how like some people are going to do good things? I felt like the only thing that I had to offer life was destruction and chaos, and maybe that I'd be an example to somebody what not to do. And I thought that was as good as it was going to get. So, you know, I resigned myself to drinking again. I tried to convince the dude that I was sitting with, it was me and him, he had a bottle, and his intent was to get me drunk because I was an unbearable person to be around. And I'm trying to convince him why it's a good idea to stop drinking. He's like, oh yeah, that's great, yeah. And he would just pour a shot and he'd put it in front of me and just keep talking, and just like, And then finally, I said, ah, and I took the shot. He was just like, thank God. You are unbearable. That's what untreated alcoholism is. I didn't find that out until 2012. And all this was going on like right after 9/11. So you can tell like this is my introduction. Alcoholics Anonymous is like way over there. You know, 2003, I got to get my license back because I'm finally starting to take that responsibility. You know, I'm going back to get my license for my DUI that happened in, you know, 1999 or whatever. And I get to, what is it? The psychotherapy clinic, because you got to do therapy for ASAP as well as go to meetings. I hear some really vital words of truth there. I start to hear that the common denominator in all my problems is not the things around me, but it's me. And that started me to my path of actually starting to show up a little bit to Alcoholics Anonymous. I hadn't really quite got to the point where I was ready to admit defeat to alcohol. I just needed the heat off. But the problem was is that I didn't know that going into it. Like, I was committed and thought I was thoroughly committed and entrenched in Alcoholics Anonymous because I was going to meetings. I didn't go frequently. I didn't have a big book. I didn't read the big book. I didn't have a sponsor. The sponsor that I did have, we talked about doing some work, and then also I talked about inventory. It's like, oh God, I'm not telling him. He's going to call the cops. He didn't know what I'm like, you know? So I get my license back and phew, gone. And I get married and I'm sober-ish. I had a drink. And now it's going on like 7 years. Still haven't drank, and things are getting great. And I, like, didn't need to do an inventory. Apparently, I didn't need that at that time because it was working. Life was working the way it was working, and it was okay. But when the bottom fell out, there's something in the big book that's really amazing. It said that we won't survive the certain trials and low points unless we grow spiritually. And I had no clue what spirituality was because I'd never read the book in the 7 years that I had been here. And when I split from my wife, we had a fight. It turned into me drinking. And it was like, I was angry at something that she said. I'm not going to go into too many details about it. It's just, I did what I am really good at doing is that I pointed a finger, basically. You know, and I drank at her, which turned into 2 solid years of debauchery. Because not all of it was bad. I had a lot of fun. I'm finally drinking legally. I'm able to go out to bars. I'm keeping it between the lines for the most part, you know, and this is my thought going into it, you know. On the outset now, looking back, I'm lucky to be alive, but it only took 2 years before the ski jump, like cliff, happened again, where I was completely powerless, and I knew it this time. You know, and I'd heard enough in the rooms about powerlessness and unmanageability to know that there's a problem, and I'm not well equipped enough to deal with it, but I don't really know what to do yet because I had been away from just going to meetings for 2 years and drinking heavily. My ex-wife had gotten sober in the interim and was calling me on a semi-regular basis at that time, talking about AA and taking steps and getting sober and making amends. And she's asking me questions like, do you think you're an alcoholic? And I'd be like, nope, not anymore. I mean, I was getting the ease and comfort that I needed. And when I did drink again, it was like opening like that seal and you letting all the pressure out. I could feel like my whole body just sink in. It's just like, oh my God, that's why. That's why I needed to do this. It made sense. Because that's really what alcoholism is to me. It's not the fact that the drink's not the problem. The drink's never been the problem. The drink has always been the solution. It's just that solution doesn't do any good for anybody in my life. It's kept me alive long enough to get here to find a suitable substitute. That's all alcohol was good for. Because without alcohol or without Alcoholics Anonymous, regardless of what I drank and did, I would be dead today because I would have committed suicide a long time ago because of the state that I was in, feeling like the best that I could ever offer life was just be a horrible example of a human being. I didn't need alcohol for that. That was the solution to that. So, I catch another DUI. And I'm getting ready, and I already know I'm going to have to go back to ASAP. You know, I got the breathalyzer put in my car. I got to stop drinking for that. You know, that was like 7 days of agony because there's tension about being in the right spot at the right time because I got the ankle bracelet thing on. I got to show up. I got to be accountable, and I've got to be watched by the sheriff's department, and like, I gotta not mess this up, and like, I don't have a solution to alcoholism yet, so it's like, I have a lot of tension and no alcohol, and that was in a very, very uncomfortable 7 days, but I could not drink for those days because I had a really strong reason, which is fear, you know, and fear can sober you for a little bit. Our book talks about that. You know, talked about it in Bill's story about how he was scared. Bill was scared. And then the goose hung high. Fear was gone. And then what happened? Armistice Day happened. Right? He got drunk again. You know, fear can sober us for a little bit. But what happens when that source of direction and purpose goes away? Well, like the kids. I'm going to not drink for the kids. Well, what do they grow up? When are they out of the house? What are you going to do then? Like, and that's what was proposed to me as a problem about alcoholism, is that I got all these human things that I'm putting my faith and my purpose and direction into that's not sustainable. And you ask yourself, well, what do you mean it's not sustainable? It's like, well, are you burnt out? Well, yeah. Well, here you go. Simple as that. You can't get burnt out if you're not overdoing it. Mind-blowing things that I learned here. Mind-blowing. Because that's just not what I'm accustomed to. So, I catch a second DUI. I'm getting ready to go back to the same psychotherapy clinic that I went to the first time. Had the same counselor that I had the first time that I told him he'd never see me again. You know? So, like, little ironies. You know, like, oh, I'm embarrassed. I did it again. Not to mention, like, I'm worried about what this dude's thinking about me, but the hell that I put my family through that I didn't think twice about, doesn't that seem odd? You know, another one of those small inconsistencies, right? So, I'm getting ready to go into this clinic, and it's like a Friday night, and I've been drinking all night. And like Monday, I'm supposed to check in, and I've been literally drinking all, like, since like Wednesday night, all night. Even though I've been working those days in between, I drink at work because I work at a bar. If you don't work at a bar and drink at that bar, there's something wrong with you, apparently. That's just how we roll. And I'm a little tipsy, and it's only like 9 o'clock at night, and I'm like stumbling. So a buddy of mine pulls me into the bathroom, and he's got some cocaine. And I'm like, that's just the ticket. This is what's going to help me stay vertical, you know, and go, because it's too early to fall over and to be that guy at the bar that's, you know, stumbling and falling over at like 10 o'clock. Like, you can't be that guy, because this is where I work. You can't do that where you work. That's a bad idea. You could do that at other bars. It's not a place where you work, right? So I do that, and I come out of the bathroom, and then I have this moment of clarity. And it's like, I didn't wake up this morning and think that cocaine was a good idea. There must be something in this business of powerlessness that I missed, because that, to me, sounds exactly like powerlessness. Because, like, I don't care about drinking, right? It did affect everybody around me, but I was too belligerent to care. But when it started to impact me, and it started to put me into the position where I was going to have something taken from me, which was my freedom. Because if I go into this ASAP clinic and I give them a sample of my bodily fluids and it comes back with cocaine, I told them I haven't done anything. I didn't know they already knew I was a liar. I thought I was just clever. A lot of people come through there and be like, no, I don't do anything else, and they all pop, and I'm like, oh God. So I happen to have this epiphany that night. I'm like, wow, I need to get to a meeting. And there's this guy that's sitting at the bar, and he's not drinking, because I know that he's not drinking, because he went through SARP, and he stayed sober. He told me he doesn't go to meetings anymore, but he knows about a group that meets on Tuesdays at downtown Norfolk. It's the Many a Strange Camel. And I sat and talked with him for a little bit. And he pointed me in the direction to get me back to my first meeting. And then the following Thursday, I'm at downtown Young and Sober, and there's this obnoxious dude. He's loud, and he's like talking about untreated alcoholism. And I'm like, I need to know that guy. And he became my sponsor. And we sat outside and talked for, the following week, we sat outside and talked for, what was it, like 4 hours or something? It was like 11:30 when we left. And it was February, and it was windy, and it was like 40 degrees and rainy, and I've got like a t-shirt on and some chef pants because I don't know how to dress appropriately for the weather, because I don't just wake up and go. You know, I don't know how to do those things yet. You know, and the sad thing was that, you know, that guy who pointed me in the direction of AA took his own life due to untreated alcoholism. And I reached out a couple of times just to say thanks, and I just never heard back from him. But like, that's just, you know, that's unfortunate. It sucks. It really does. You know, and our the foundation that we have here in Alcoholics Anonymous is not that far off from that. You know, the guy that took Bill Wilson through the steps, through the Oxford group, died drunk. Because the message is stronger than the messenger. You know, we're not saints. We're not like spectacular people, like hearts of gold, all of us, all the time. We're human beings that really know how to tie it on the wrong point in time, right? Whether you got there because you just sipped wine, or you sipped 30 packs and you wreck cars, you know, we do have that one thing in common. Is that once I start drinking, I can't stop. But then I also have a mind that when I do stop, it tells me it's time for a drink, because I'm uncomfortable with the things that are going on around me, because they don't suit my needs or my desires. So back to the story. I go through the steps rapidly, because this time I'm no longer delusional about the fact that I have alcoholism, because I did not, and this is what I came in on. I did not know when I was going to take a drink or a drug, because I didn't wake up that morning and think it was a good idea. So therefore there's a problem, right? People in my life have been telling me, and I'm 25 at this point, and people in my life for the past 10 years have been telling me that's been a problem, and it hasn't been for me until it was for me. Like, you can know all the way, and that's great, that's just your knowledge, but that's not my experience. And that's hard because much like many other alcoholics that I know, you know, we're stubborn and we go to things that are extremes and we just, I got to figure this out myself. Yeah, I go right ahead. I hope you don't have to, but chances are you will, you know. But so I took the steps. I started to see what these inconsistencies really were. And I had been living under this purpose and direction of just me, my needs. I was the beginning and the end of my universe. I didn't think about you when I woke up. I thought about me and what I wanted and what I needed. I thought that's what everyone did. Honestly, there's a pretty good chance that that's just how things are everywhere. Like, that's a normal thing in human behavior. It's just for a chronic alcoholic like me, when I don't get the things that I want or need, I will take a drink eventually because that's when it gets that bad. Like, I'll look for the ease and comfort in a whole lot of other ways before I settle on the spiritual solution, right? Because if it were that simple to just be told, hey, you're an alcoholic. Okay, what do you need me to do? It'd be good to do it. I could have been sober for like 20-something years now. But that's just not my story, right? So I have this thing that happens inside of me that you can call it a psychic change, a spiritual experience, a religious experience, whatever you want to call it, an epiphany, a series of events where I realize from my own inventory, because I wrote it down and I talked about it, that 100% of my inventory came out of the need for ease and comfort. 100% of my inventory came at your expense. And you just fill in the blank with your, because it came at the expense of my parents, it came at the expense of the Navy, it came at the expense of the schools, it came at the expense of my friends. The people who were really my friends, like I have a few of them that have known me since the beginning. And what's funny is that my closest, truest friends from like childhood to, you know, when I came to make amends, they were like, yeah, we knew you were screwed up. We loved you anyway. And like, there were people that I made amends to. They were not so happy to see me again. And that's just the way the cookie crumbles. And there were people that were just like, whatever, dude. I don't care. If that's what you need to do, man, right on, go ahead. What? And then some of them were enthusiastic and wanted to help, you know. But I started to see that it wasn't really that important, because I wasn't the first thing on your mind, because that was the first thing on my mind. You're probably the first thing on your mind too. Okay, wow, okay, let's clear that out. I'm not the center of the universe anymore. It's good, because God needs all the room he needs to help y'all. And if I get out of the way, it makes it even easier for everybody else. So, but what's interesting is, you know, I get asked for help within the next couple of months in Alcoholics Anonymous. Some dude just like really desperate because he asked me for help. I'm only been sober 6 months and I've just taken the steps and I'm like, I got it. Let's go. I figured it out, right? I've got God. I've got the book. I've got a sponsor. I've got AA. I've got it now. And in a way, yeah, it's great. That's a great beginning. But arrogance took over immediately because I'm good at figuring things out. I haven't figured that part out yet, though. I'm just side note. I didn't know that I was a good figure-outer. I still thought I was an idiot until I went back to school. That's it. So I'm looking at this guy, and we're doing inventory, and he's just like, it's like 5 minutes of inventory, and I'm like, nah, dude, that's not enough. And I start to tell him how he needs to do his personal house cleaning within his own heart. Like, that's not what y'all did for me. Y'all showed me what you did, and I did it. But I was willing, and I tried to make him willing, and it's not how that works. So I started to gain the experience of what it's like to be me from the eyes of people that aren't me, Because when I'm an untreated alcoholic, I'm a hard person to be around. And I get to witness that when I see newcomers come in, or when I see old timers slip, and I see friends go down dark paths. And that's the reminder, because I can't scare me sober. I can't scare you sober. That's just the way it is. But, you know, over the past couple of years, it's been interesting. You know, I've sponsored quite a few people. I've taken a lot of inventory, and I've read a lot of other things. The book tells us to like seek out books to grow, because the founders knew that the pamphlets they had weren't enough, so they wrote a book. And the book is sufficient to begin the process for a guy like me, because it gives me the proper directions and an order which I can do, which can facilitate the experience that can cause the psychic change to happen. But after that, there's more work that I need to do. And I heard all of the people who've been taking this inventory, doing this work for a long time, the ones that are solid and taking steps and doing work. And I've been hearing their story about how they got to continue to do. And I'm like, yeah, I do. And I am doing everything that I can see to do. And then I get hit blindsided by things that are going on in my life because I don't know that they were there to take care of. I start to realize that this business of delusion doesn't disappear just because we take the steps. Not because we wish them away or will them away, which is, in a sense, doing the inventory just shows me how delusional I can be if given enough time and energy, right? Because I can justify all of it. But I don't see the things that are just, I don't see yet. And I'm confused when I'm hurt again by my own hand in Alcoholics Anonymous and I need to reach out for help again. This time, thank God, I did not get drunk. But thank God, alcohol wasn't the problem. You know? And getting back to the basics is something that I'm trying to do. Just trying to do. Like, I'm trying to keep it simple today. That's something that I'm not really good at doing anymore. I went back to school. I did great, which did a good number for my ego, which was probably not good for my spiritual condition in the long run. But I mean, I these are things that I did not know. I did find out that I'm not a complete idiot. And when you really down in the core of your being believe that you are not as intelligent as everyone else in the room, that does a number of really bad things for your self-esteem. And when I got smart and I found out that that didn't help my self-esteem either, and I got people around me that are great examples of just carrying the message, and somewhere along the way, carrying the message and sponsoring people was no longer sufficient in my brain. It worked to get me here. It will work to keep me here. I have to find a way for that to be okay. Just okay. It doesn't need to be great. It doesn't need to be fantastic or poor. I don't need to have an opinion about it. I just need to do it. And that's something that I'm just now coming back to the realization to. I've had a couple of people in my life, more than a few, that have had their own trials and tribulations, that have shined a light on how bad it could get. And when I do see when my friends let up, you know, and I see the transformation of when they come back and they're stronger, and that gives me hope. But, you know, so the gifts, because like that's all what happened. And what it's like now is, you know, I have a life that's beyond my wildest expectations and dreams. And if you asked me to chart a path to go back to it, there would be no straight line. There was a lot of successes and failures that I found out later were successes as well. And there was a lot of pain. And somewhere along the way, I no longer started to shy away from the pain of growth. I started to face it head on to the best of my ability. From when I got here 2012, it was zero, and probably about a 5, 9, 10, I don't know. And today, that's I'm not upset. I'm not like trying to bend rebar around a tree to get this thing to work my way. My prayer and meditation has never been stronger, because when there's nobody around, I still have me in my head, and I have to be okay with me if I'm to get through. To get through so that I can connect with you, so that I can get well, and that in the process of doing the stuff that you can witness and you can see and you can do yourself, because that's what I had to do. That's what we do. When I took the inventory, my sponsor didn't hold my hand and do the inventory for me. He said, this is what I do. If you do this, you'll have the same experience. And we get to do that today. We get to show up here and be examples of what step work, spiritual experiences, how to conquer the business of like resentment, master it. That's the thing we can do. We're not going to overcome it and get rid of it. We master it by understanding that it's never going away. It's what do we do when we get to it, when we realize it. We don't worry about it when it's going to pop up. We just deal with it when it happens, right? Same with fear. These are the things that y'all showed me how to do, because y'all said it and I heard it. And I didn't understand it because I haven't had that experience. But when I started to see y'all do it, I started to look for that in my life. And that's when I started to find it too. Because I had enough faith that God works through you and your actions, good, bad, or indifferent, to be examples of what we can do to recover from alcoholism. And My story is my program, is your story is your program, and none of it's ever going to be the same. But if you're making honest strides to obtain spiritual growth through work and self-sacrifice for others, and that's not just alcoholics, that's just people out there, the ones that we get jealous of because they don't need this, but we're blessed because we get this. You know, I don't know. I don't judge normal people versus alcoholics anymore. I just think we're all people today. You know, I know I'm different, but not that much. Just normal drunk. So, you know, if you have, you know, questions, or if you're inside, you're like hurting and you're like holding on to something, I understand. I can do that. I did that yesterday, so, you know, but being able to talk about it here in front of you, next to you, because we're in the same room, not just because I'm up at a podium, but this is how I feel like it, the best way to conduct myself when I'm just at a meeting, being truthful, because I can't stay sober if I'm not that way. I have to have hard conversations with people and tell them the truth. That's uncomfortable. If I don't do it, I die. You know, I don't know about y'all. I don't know about your condition. You may be a heavy drinker. I don't know. I thought I was for a while until I got drunk again, and no, I'm an alcoholic. But so I want to leave you with this. You know, you may have gotten here alone and broken. And I know that I got here that way, and there's no shame in that. And if you can let go of the shame and the guilt and the remorse just long enough to ask another fellow human being that has suffered just like you to just say, Uncle, help, please. I don't know what I'll do. I'll just help, and we'll figure it out. And just walk. Like, there's no finer example of spiritual growth than that. And that's where it begins. That could be the very beginning. This is a great place to find the people who can help you, because it was exactly what happened to me. Because meetings themselves are an avenue for the help. It's not the help. But I need it just like I need the help. Just like I need the fellowship. I need the unity. I need the service. I need all of it. I need to be of service to you through doing this, helping out, being on time. Yeah. Sorry.
Showed up when you were supposed to.
Yeah, well, that's beside the point. So, I don't know how much time I got left. What is it?
You got as much time as you need?
Well, I mean, it's 15 till, is that?
We're good.
Good job.